Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller, and this is a show today that asks, what the heck was that? In the parlance of the military, it's called unexplained aerial phenomena. In science fiction and pop culture, we know them as UFOs. And a new report soon to be released from Congress finds that although there is no evidence to think these aerial phenomena are carrying some kind of alien life in them, American intelligence agencies can't eliminate the possibility altogether. So how to explain what pilots have witnessed and scientists have struggled to explain? And that's what we're delving into today. And as our guests join us, I want you to let your imagination roam. What could explain these crafts that hover and spin and appear to move at hypersonic speed? Do you trust that the American government is telling all that it knows about these UFOs? So we're going to play a little bit of sound from pilots this morning that are witnessing this. But I also want you to just, you've probably seen the video online, I want you to let your imagination roam. What could explain it? Do you think the American government is telling all that it knows about UFOs? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Mick West is with us, a science communicator who spends a lot of time debunking conspiracy theories online. He's the author of Escaping the Rabbit Hole, How to Debunk Conspiracy Theories Using Facts, Logic, and Respect. He's with us from Sacramento, California. Mick, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you on today.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Dr. Avi Loeb is with us, an astrophysicist and a professor of science at Harvard University, and with us from Boston. Professor, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Professor, these sightings from military pilots and other witnesses, and we're going to play a little bit of sound on this in just a minute, they've been coming in for at least two decades. I'm curious about whether the military has always taken them seriously, and if not, what has changed?
Right. So the question is really how much more data there is, how much more evidence there is than the one that was released so far. And I would assume that we are just seeing the tip of the iceberg. What I base it on is statements made by public officials that we trust, like former President Barack Obama, former CIA Director James Woolsey. These are serious people. There were many other serious officials that said that at least in some cases, these objects appear to be real. And their nature is unclear. So it needs further study. Now, without getting into the details, if we just adopt this premise, I think it's time for the scientific community to basically get more data from the same location, you know, place our best cameras, recording devices, rather than rely on classified documents that become declassified at some point. We can collect our own data. Nobody bans the sky. The sky is not classified in any way. We can put cameras on wide-field telescopes, collect the data, and figure out, clarify the fog. That's the best approach, rather than trying to argue, oh, the data that exists out there on YouTube is really not reliable, and I can debunk this and I can debunk that. That is not really the issue, because that data is probably the lowest quality data that we can have access to. The high-quality data we cannot access because of national security concerns. The government doesn't want adversaries, you know, other nations, to know what quality data it can gather given the sensors that are classified.
I see.
So that, I think, is the background behind this. We shouldn't, you know, and be naive and think, oh, whatever they put on YouTube is everything they
is
have.
Is it. I've got you. Mick, the professor here is saying it's the tip of the iceberg. I mean, that alludes to the idea that the government has a lot more information. And as you hear him saying, let's go get more. What do you think of the idea of that?
That would be great to get more data, and I'd love to get more data. But you know, I've been looking at the data that's available, and you might say that is the lowest quality data. But from what I've heard from various people, the videos that exist that haven't been released aren't actually any more compelling than the ones we have here. The things that we have in the public domain right now are things that were actually leaked by the from the UAP task force, the task force that is looking into these various reports, and they're really not particularly compelling. However, they seem to actually think that they were compelling. There was one video, which was this green triangle video, which looked like something amazing, but upon further analysis, it turned out to look also exactly like a plane that is out of focus. So I don't have a very high degree of confidence in this UAP task force, and I think the reason that we have this situation is that they don't have very much funding. We have a very small task force, probably just a couple of people, and they're producing reports about things which, you know, are true, that we have sightings that we can't explain, but we've had sightings that we can't explain for over 70 years since the dawn of military aviation. Just because we can't explain something doesn't mean we need to leap to aliens. And in fact, they've said themselves there's no evidence of aliens.
Let me take a call here from Leo in Minneapolis. Hi, Leo. What are you curious about?
Hi, I'm wondering what you guys think about what kind of impact, as opposed to these videos kind of surfacing and being the cause in and of themselves, actually things like Bob Lazar's documentary on Netflix and like appearing on Joe Rogan. Do you think these things could have been some kind of prompting of that, or kind of struck a chord in culture that kind of made people ask questions?
Like Professor Loeb, is there pressure building, I guess, from some other sources for this task force to get serious and take a, you know, a studied examination of these videos and accounts? Is this coming from the outside, I think Leo's asking?
That's unclear to me. It's also potentially driven from the inside, in the sense that, you know, more people get access to the data and keeps accumulating to a point where it crossed a certain threshold and the political system decided to discuss it more openly rather than dismiss it and ridicule. There is also the atmosphere, in the public culture, where in the past such discussions were taboo, and people were felt that if they were to address it, they would be considered crazy or unreliable. There was a shift in that regard as well. So, I mean, it's not, I think it's really irrelevant. The real question is, are these objects real? And if they are real, let's get to the bottom of it and find out what they are. I think even if there is a mundane explanation, we can figure it out as scientists. And the current situation where many scientists just ridicule these reports, and at the same time, the public is fascinated and comes up with speculations about what they might mean, that's an unhealthy situation. You don't want this situation to exist, because it would, fuel further speculations. And you want to clear up the fog and explain what the nature of these objects is. And scientists can do it.
Right. So I want to play some of the audio here from Lieutenant Ryan Graves. He's an experienced Navy pilot. He was flying off the coast of Jacksonville, Florida in 2015. And you can hear this unexplained aerial phenomena come into view. And you're just hearing his raw reaction here.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. Oh my gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. Look at that thing, dude.
Professor Loeb, I mean, what's really compelling about that is he later says, I read a long interview with him, that he says, you know, you can see no evidence of mechanical, of a combustion engine, no kind of mechanical propellant, I guess, for the way this machine is operating. So what do you see when you look at that video?
Well, two possible interpretations. Either, you know, it's a natural phenomena that maybe a visual illusion or something happening in the atmosphere that gives the impression of a real object when it's not. Or it could be some technology that another nation possesses and for espionage that supersedes what these pilots can imagine. And of course, if none of the above, then it could be of extraterrestrial origin. And relying on pilots is not really the best approach to figure out the nature of such objects because, you know, they don't have the best instrumentation. They don't have the scientific knowledge to assess what is happening. And we definitely need the professionals to deal with it.
Mick, what
do you... You won't invite a person from the street to fix the pipes at your home if there is a leak.
You want
a professional, a plumber.
Yeah, Professor, I really understand your argument here. Get the scientists in on this, maybe be more transparent, and then get some more data. Mick, what do you see when you look at the video that we just played?
Well, that video there wasn't actually taken by Ryan Graves, and that wasn't his voice. It was another pilot who hasn't actually come forward. Ryan's actually seen them on radar, not actually on video.
Ah.
But when I look at that particular video, I see it's an infrared video, so we're looking at a heat source, and I think we're actually just looking at a very hot object like a jet engine, and it looks like it's rotating, and it looks like the shape it is because of optical artifacts within the camera. But very quickly, like, I think we're making a big mistake here by talking about these objects.
Why?
As if we're just, there's just one type of object. All these sightings are vastly different. You've got this video here, which has this rotating flying saucer, and then just literally minutes later, the same plane was taking a video of a small white dot, a cold object that looked like it was going fast, but it really wasn't. All these things are very, very different. Did we have different radar sightings, different eyewitness accounts, different photos, different videos? Saying this is just these objects is really just trying to pigeonhole the phenomena into one thing when really it's a vast number of different things.
I mean, we need some frame of reference, Mick, here to refer to unexplained aerial phenomena, don't we? And I hear you on saying they look differently, there might be different explanations for them, but they are clustered in examination by this task force as, at the moment, unexplained.
Sure, but now we have this list of 120 incidents, which is coming out from this report,
uh-huh.
And it's very likely that the vast majority of those are represented by fairly mundane things. Some of them might be interesting things like foreign drones, or perhaps even some kind of secret technology that is being tested. But just trying to come up with one explanation for it is really missing the point of what we're looking at here, which is a lot of different things. Pilots will not be able to identify everything they see in the sky, and foreign adversaries will send drones into our airspace. And these are things that need to be identified.
Professor Loeb, what do you make of that?
Well, I would guess that the Pentagon pretty much knows what's going on around those areas, because it's not just one pilot or several pilots seeing something. There are other incidents where infrared cameras and optical cameras and a lot of other instruments were used. And as I said, there must be instruments that are being used that are not being leaked to YouTube. And so I would pay more attention to people that had access to the full data that I trust based on their integrity. And if they say that these are real objects, then these are real objects probably. And then the question as to their nature, I would rather than, try to get data from the government, which is a very difficult task. Let's get the data ourselves. Let's make it open. Let's have a fair discussion using scientific instruments with open data, like we do very often in science. You know, we're in the 21st century. We're not in the dark ages where, you know, someone would say the human body has a soul and therefore anatomy should be forbidden. These kinds of arguments do not make sense right now. The sky is not classified. We can buy in stores, state-of-the-art cameras and get a better sense of what's going on. This is not a mystery. This is something we can resolve if enough funds.
Wait
a
minute.
An experiment.
When you say this is not a mystery, it doesn't mean that because there are more collection technology, that there is going to be full explanation for what it is that's collected. Right, Professor Loeb? Right, what do you mean?
What I meant by that is that we are not helpless, that this mystery is not like a mystery you read in a novel where you really can't collect the clues on your own. You depend on the author playing them out for you. We can be an active player in this game. That's all I'm saying. And in science, that's the way science makes progress because we are not relying on scientific papers that were written by others, but mm-hmm. we can reproduce the results in new experiments. So the point is, let's get more data that is open and complete and under control and not classified and figure out the answer. That's what I mean by the fact that in reality, we're talking about real objects that, it's not a mystery novel.
I want to play Lieutenant Commander Alex Dietrich. She's a former U.S. Navy pilot, and she and along with three other Navy pilots have seen one of these objects, and this is her description. This is from NPR this morning. This is her description of what she saw.
We call it the Tic Tac because that's what it looked like. This sort of round, oblong, smooth white object flying low and fast. What was so surprising and what was so unnerving for us was the way that it moved. This was behaving in a way that we weren't used to. It didn't fit any of our mental models. We couldn't categorize it. And it seemed to be defying our laws of physics.
So Mick, when you hear that, do you think, well, there will be some kind of explanation for it. It's just not going to fit, what Alex Dietrich already knows.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because when you see something that you've never seen before, it's actually quite difficult to get a handle on what you're actually looking at. If you see a featureless white Tic Tac in the sky, you don't know how big it is, and you don't know how far away it is because you have zero frame of reference. So you might make mistakes in seeing how it moves. And Alex herself will admit that this was 17 years ago, this sighting, and her memory has changed in multiple ways since then. So her recollections of it might not be entirely accurate. And of course, we always have this strange juxtaposition where we have eyewitness testimony of something that's really great. It's up close and we get lots and lots of details.
Yeah.
And then we have video of things that is blurry and literally like tens of miles away. We never get the two at the same time for some reason. I think that's very telling about the level of evidence that we actually have.
You're listening to a conversation this morning that is taking note of the fact that the task force that has been looking into these unexplained aerial phenomena is getting ready to release its report. You've probably seen some reporting in the Times and in a lot of other news sources about what this report may say, and the fact, as the Times reports, that American intelligence agencies can't eliminate the possibility of some unexplained aerial phenomena. In pop culture, we call this UFOs. And so we've invited two guests this morning to talk to us about what some of the explanations may be and the process for going forward and trying to identify what this is after a couple decades of these reports that, for the moment, defy explanation. So Dr. Avi Loeb is with us. He's an astrophysicist and a professor of science at Harvard University. And Mick West is with us. He's a science communicator who debunks conspiracy theories. I'm asking you to, let your imaginations roam a little bit. What could explain what this video and audio and these eyewitness accounts have picked up? I mean, some of these pilots are talking about crafts that hover and spin and move at hypersonic speed. I want to ask Dr. Loeb about that. The other thing I'm curious about is whether you trust that the government is telling all that it knows about UFOs. I know there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there about that, but you don't have to, you know, go down the rabbit hole of a conspiracy theory to wonder if the American government is withholding some of this information for reasons and whether they ought to be more transparent about it. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 to Ron in Stillwater. Ron, it sounds like you've been trying to think of some explanations for this. What have you come up with?
Well, I don't know if it's an explanation, but when I was younger, I always, you know, in my eye, I'd see small specks of darkness. Uh-huh. And sometimes it would become colored if I moved my head fast. So based on the physiology of the eye, I'm just wondering if that could explain some of these UFOs, especially since those pilots are moving at, you know, such fast speeds.
Yeah.
That, you know, that speck can move around in your eye pretty fast.
The physical effect of the experience of flying. Professor Loeb, I have a feeling that's been considered. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so that's why we need to rely on instruments and multiple instruments. Because if you have a radar system and you have an infrared camera and you have an optical camera and you have eyewitnesses seeing the same thing, then that gives you confidence that it's real. You don't want to rely just on eyewitness testimony for the same reason you don't want to blindly believe the biblical story that Abraham heard the voice of God telling him to sacrifice his only son. I mean, if Abraham had a cell phone with a voice memo app, he could have pressed the button and recorded
uh-huh.
that.
Uh-huh.
So my point is that we don't need to believe either the government or pilots. We can use instruments that will record the data. And the worst thing we can do is not to do anything, because I think these reports are intriguing enough to motivate scientists to get into the game and figure out the answer. And also, there is a national security concern always lurking in the background that perhaps these are instruments that were developed by other nations and are spying on us. And of course, the fact that they were discovered in the vicinity of nuclear plants, of military facilities, drives this concern.
Mm-hmm.
Because why would you find them there? And so I think, you know, the for example, the TikTok that was discussed, you know, as a physicist, I would tell you that first, if something moves supersonically through air, it must generate a shockwave.
Okay.
That's why we hear the sonic boom when an airplane does that. It's inevitable. If the object has some cross section and it pushes the air in its mm-hmm. motion, mm-hmm. Then it creates a shock. That's inevitable if it moves supersonically. And if we don't hear if there was no sonic boom, or if the object goes through water and comes out without a splash, or there are all kinds of physical effects that are secondary that must be occurring when an object is doing something. Now, if you see a spot moving across the sky supersonically without producing a shock and getting into water without producing a splash and all kinds of, then you say, well, it's something fishy going on with your instruments, because a real object would have those effects. And that's why physicists need to look into it. You can't have, you know, based on the laws of physics that we know, you can't have some phenomena occurring without other phenomena occurring as a result. One thing triggers another thing. And, you know, the laws of physics are being tested extremely well in laboratories. We understand, you know, we see them being replicated everywhere. And just arguing that there is something that violates the laws of physics, to me, would be, you know, extremely shocking, because we've tested those in a lot of circumstances. And
well,
so if someone wants to argue that there is a violation of the laws of physics and someone has a proof for it, that someone should get a Nobel Prize.
Professor Loeb, I just want to ask you this, given what you've just said. Does it appear to you that the way, when you've looked at the videos, you've looked at the data, the eyewitness accounts, that when the pilots are saying there doesn't seem to be an engine, no exhaust, confusion about what the crafts are being propelled by, I mean, do you buy that? Or are you with Mick when you say you know, the video is so difficult to really discern what's going on there. I don't think we can draw those conclusions.
No, so I would say lack of an engine or a propulsion system that we are familiar with is not a concern for me. I don't care what drives it. I just know that when something moves, you know, something that has a cross-section big enough for us to see the light reflected off it, that's what we see. We see the light reflected off it. It's an object. That's something that reflects light also reflects air. Okay. And when it moves through air, it creates other effects. So I would worry about things that are inevitable, that are not model dependent. You know, I don't care if it uses antimatter for propulsion or it uses fusion or something that pilots are not familiar with. That is not really the issue. The issue is, can it operate in a way that doesn't violate the laws of physics?
Right. I hear you on that. Let me grab a call here from Maria in Fargo, North Dakota. Hi, Maria.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I was going to slightly disagree and kind of wonder where this, you know, this opinion of maybe not trusting the pilots 100%. These are people that are extremely highly trained, have a level of confidence that's instilled in them by the government that, you know, if you're going to have eyewitnesses to something, these are the people that you want to eyewitness. So I have a hard time believing that they would just have this casual conversation with each other about something that they think they're seeing versus something that they're fairly confident is unusual, right? It kind of boggles my mind, right? You're not going to have somebody that's just a regular civilian make these observations. And then, yeah, I would absolutely doubt them. But these are the exact people you want to make these observations in high-stakes situations. And I do think that the government doesn't always tell us 100% what is happening. As well, they shouldn't, right? There's a reason why these people are in the positions they're in, have the training they're in. I would trust it to go through them versus just anybody else.
Mick, what do you think of what Maria's argument is here on let's give a little more faith to what the pilots are observing, given their knowledge and their training?
Well, sure, pilots are very highly trained at identifying other planes, but they're not trained at identifying unidentified objects which they don't know the shape of. They're very, very good at doing things like dogfighting. But here they're thrust into a situation where they've no idea what they're actually looking at. And in that situation, their training can actually make things worse because they try to fit things into a framework that they know. And this is something that people have actually done research into, where fighter pilots actually make worse observers of unknown situations than people without training in aerial situations.
It's like confirmation bias, I think you're talking about, Mick, right? I know what I know, and this doesn't fit into the frame of what I know, so it must be inexplicable. Is that what you're saying?
If they look at something that is flying in the air, they will tend to think that the size of that object is the same size as a typical fighter jet, and that's what actually happened here with this Tic Tac object that Alex Dietrich saw and Commander David Fravid saw. They both said it was the size of a fighter jet. But if it was something that was actually half that size, that would vastly change their perception of what's going on. You would get this thing called the parallax effect, where because you think it's twice as big as it actually is, you think it's twice as far away. So if you're flying around something that's 1 mile away, it'll look exactly like something that's 2 miles away that is kind of flying around you in a circle. And then when you fly towards it, because you think it's so much further away, it'll look like it accelerates really rapidly towards you and then flies off over your shoulder, which is exactly what is described. So I think there's a very real possibility that in that particular sighting, it was actually an optical illusion caused
really?
By them forcing the size perception of a jet onto something that was actually a lot smaller, like, for example, some kind of target balloon.
We're going to get a look at the latest news. And when we come back, one of the questions that I have, and I see you have a number of questions about this as well, I want to ask our guests whether it's possible that other countries have advanced their hypersonic technology or the kind of technology that would be required so quickly and so secretly that we wouldn't know what they were doing. And then what are they doing in American airspace? Back to the conversation now with Dr. Avi Loeb, astrophysicist, professor of science at Harvard, and Mick West, a science communicator and author of Escaping the Rabbit Hole. Right to the phones here to Blake in downtown St. Paul. Blake, it sounds like you're reading Dr. Loeb's book at the moment. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. I'm just about to finish it. So I was hoping the doctor could kind of indoctrinate the listening audience into a brief spark notes as to the contents of the wonderful book.
Okay. Tell us a little bit. Yeah. And you wanted to know?
Yeah. I just don't feel like the vast majority of people are aware of this. And it's for people listening, I feel like they have a pretty high interest in this level. So this would probably be something that would be pretty interesting. Hearing from the author himself. So.
Dr. Loeb, I should have been talking about mentioning the title of the book. Why don't you give it to us and you can tell us a little bit about what you're arguing in it?
Yes. So the book is Extraterrestrial, The First Sign of Intelligent Life Beyond Earth. And it focuses on an object that was discovered in 2017 by a telescope in Hawaii. It was the first object from outside the solar system that was spotted near Earth. And the reason we know that is because it moved too fast to be bound to the sun. So it's the first interstellar object, given the name Oumuamua, which means a scout in the Hawaiian language. And at first, astronomers assumed that it must be a rock of the type that we have found in the solar system before, either a comet or an asteroid, just came from another star. But as time went on and we collected more data, and by the way, here we're dealing with scientific data that was collected by telescopes and was published in scientific journals. So there is no debate about the validity of that data or the meaning of that data. And so it turns out that that Oumuamua did not show any cometary tail. There was no visual that implied dust or gas around it. And in fact, the Civita Space Telescope put very tight limits on evaporation. So it was definitely not a comet of the type that we have seen. But then its shape was quite extreme because as it was tumbling, the amount of sunlight reflected from it changed by a factor of 10. And the best fit for the shape, the best model, was that of a flat object, pancake-like. And then it exhibited an excess push away from the sun, which cannot be assigned to evaporation because there was no gas around it, and could only be interpreted in terms of reflection of sunlight. And that meant the object must be quite thin and didn't look like anything we have seen before. And I suggested that it might have been artificially made, and that sort of a space trash, something sent by another civilization that perhaps is defunct, not operational anymore. And in September 2020, after my book was already written, there was another object discovered by the same telescope, given the name 2020 SO, and turned out to be a rocket booster that was launched in 1966 as part of a lunar lander mission.
Wow.
And that one, we understand why it was pushed away from the sun by reflecting sunlight, because it had thin walls and also didn't have cometary tail for obvious reasons. So we know that it was artificial because we made it. We just don't know who made Oumuamua.
So, Mick, we have a tweet here from Kimberly who says, could some of these unexplained flying objects actually be space junk that escaped to fall through our atmosphere before they burned up? There are thousands of pieces of human-made debris in space.
Sure, that's quite possible. And of course, that speaks to the issue of there being lots of different explanations for things. We see sometimes just lights in the sky. Sometimes we see them hovering. Sometimes we see them streak across the sky. And if you're seeing something streak across the sky, then space junk or a meteorite is a great explanation. If it's just hovering there, it could be a distant plane, or it could be a drone, or it could even be a star. Pilots have actually mistaken the planet Venus for an oncoming plane several times.
Really?
There was a case where a pilot took evasive action because he thought he was flying towards another plane. Pilots do make mistakes in observations. Pilots sometimes crash their planes simply because they have lost situational awareness. So when you're looking up in the sky and you see something, it's actually very difficult to interpret what you're looking at, and pilots can fall prey to that. And seeing something like a meteorite or space junk can also be very difficult to interpret if you've never seen it before. People are still mistaking the Starlink satellites for UFOs, even though they've been explained thousands of times.
Right. Professor Loeb, is that part of the issue here, space junk you know, starts to disintegrate, individual pieces fly out. They don't look like, you know, obviously what they did when they were part of the overall, whatever it was, machinery. And people just aren't familiar enough with it to know what they're looking at, especially when it's thousands of miles above us.
Well, UFOs is a mixed bag. So It includes a lot of different types of objects that people report about. And it's possible that some of them are belong to this category, but definitely not the tic-tac that we discussed before, because it doesn't rain from the sky. It moves, hovers above the ocean. You know, there are things that were reported that have nothing to do with debris coming from space. And really, frankly, you know, we don't need to explain all of the UFO reports. If there is one object, just one out of the hundreds that are reported, just one that cannot be explained by a terrestrial origin, that by itself is a very important result. And so that's why we need a scientific exploration of all these unusual objects that do not appear to be understood, and get as much data as possible. Let's follow the evidence. That's the key for a scientific approach.
Mick, do you think that's a waste of money?
Well, I think searching for things that can't be explained isn't really a good thing. We should search for actual explanations. And I think we do want to try to explain all of these things. But we're always going to have cases that we can't explain. So simply saying that we've not been able to explain something doesn't mean anything. There was a famous case in Chile in 2017.
I was reading about that, yeah.
The Chilean Air Force spent 2 years investigating a UFO. And they were completely unable to figure out what it was. And they eliminated every possibility they could think of, including space junk and planes. And at the end, they declared it to be a truly unknown object. This was an official announcement by this task force that they had. But then they released the video, released the data, and 3 days later, people on the internet, including me, actually figured out that it was just a plane, and we found the radar data and we proved 100%. So something being declared unknown doesn't mean that it's actually aliens. It just means it's still unknown.
Call from Derek in Eden Prairie. Hi, Derek. Good to have you on the phone.
Good morning. Enjoying the discussion. Back in 2004, the Mexican Air Force had some planes on patrol. They picked up 11 objects on their infrared radar that they could visually see heat sources from, but they could not visually see the objects generating these heat sources. Mm-hmm. And they were close enough, and they were close enough in proximity that they should have seen these objects visually. And this is a group of people, not one person. So yeah. I'm just curious to know, how could that happen? How could that be explained?
Professor,
many years ago, there was the incident in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes.
Where like thousands of people saw these same objects hovering over Phoenix at the same time. They saw these objects move from one part of the city to the other. And we're talking like officials, law enforcement officials, government officials documented the incident. So when thousands of people see the same objects at the same time,
yeah, how do we explain that?
And they can't explain it.
What does that mean? Yeah, Professor Loeb, I want to ask you: are you familiar with what Derek's talking about from the Mexican government going on the record? Sounds a little bit like what Mick was saying about the Chilean government. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if all these incidents are simply lack of information about human-made equipment. These are not the most intriguing cases. I would love to see the full data that is not being released behind the Pentagon report.
Right. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about is whether it's possible that countries have advanced their technology so secretly that we wouldn't know what they're doing, and they are testing it, and that's what pilots are seeing. And then I want to know what they're doing testing it over American airspace. But is that...
Well, that's
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. That's unlikely because we pretty much know the limits of our technological capabilities based on the frontiers of science, based on intelligence information we have on other countries, and based on the fact that if there was a technology, it would find its place in the commercial sector, in products, or in the battlefield, because it provides an edge for one nation relative to another that cannot be hidden. You would see things that are unusual in the battlefield or in products. We don't see that, and we pretty much know where humans are at this point. And I wouldn't think. And the second point I would make is if some of the reports discuss objects maneuvering in ways that violate the laws of physics, or do things that has nothing to do with technological advance, because all of our technologies are satisfying the laws of physics. Otherwise, someone else would have gotten the Nobel Prize.
So I just want to be clear here for people that have joined the show. Are you saying that some of what you've seen, Professor Loeb, appears to, and you know, looked at the eyewitness accounts, appears to defy the law of physics, or that's really what you want to know more about?
I want to know that. There were people claiming that. I don't know if it's substantiated, because I don't have access to the data, but I would say that if there is any evidence for that, then it has nothing. It cannot be human-made, because we know the laws of physics work in all of the circumstances that we explored in modern science. And even tiny variations in things we know earn Nobel Prizes these days. Relatively small modifications, changes to the standard model of physics. So talking about instruments doing things that violate the laws of physics so bluntly, is just unacceptable. I mean, if true, then of course it will revolutionize our understanding of the reality.
Mm-hmm. Mick, I'm going to grab a call for you here from John in Albert Lea. Hi, John. What are you thinking about here?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually have a couple points, but the main thing that I wanted to say is it seems that people react too much to the baggage that's already existing about UFOs and
or UAVs. Observation. Yeah.
It's easy, both sides. You get people that immediately see something that's alien, and you get other people who immediately will put it down, just from the idea that they're reacting to the stories that are already out there about this phenomena. If UFOs happened for the very first time today, if the very first UFO happened today, we'd be approaching it in a totally different way. But it's like you have the people who immediately want to say that there's nothing out there, and you want the people who want to say there's somebody here. And in both cases, it's an extreme. I like what Dr. Loeb is saying. I like what both you guys are saying. They're both right. But what I would like Dr. Loeb is saying about let's get some more data.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a look at what's actually going down. Because it seems to be, to me, excuse me, that what a lot of people tend to react to is the stories that they already assume people are going to say about this information.
No,
and then the other thing I'd like to just point out really quickly is that we didn't believe a man could land on the moon at the turn of the 20th century. We didn't think a heavier than air craft could fly. Newtonian physics was considered all there was until Einstein came along. So the idea that we don't understand the technology doesn't whatever it might be, natural phenomena or whatever, doesn't make that it might not be. And that's what makes discoveries.
Okay,
we don't know this.
John, I'm a little short on time. I want to give Mick a chance to react to this idea that, you know, we're kind of burdened by all the pop culture and the science fiction and all of that. Mick, this is something you have to practice, is clearing away some of that noise when you look at these examples, right?
Sure. But you do have to look at things in the framework of historical examples, and we've had pretty much the same thing for the last 70 years. But I think you've got to look at it in some perspective here. If what we were actually seeing was real, if we were seeing some kind of anti-gravity, some kind of warp drive, something hovering without means of propulsion, this would be huge. Not just like huge, like for this year, it would be like epochal. It would change human civilization as we know it. It would be a massive technological advantage. And if it was something we had good evidence for, it would literally be worth spending trillions of dollars on. The F-35 fighter program has cost over $1 trillion over its lifetime. So if we could have something that would vastly outpace that and change science as we know it, the military would be spending at least billions and possibly trillions of dollars. And they're not. They're hardly spending anything at all on it. And I think the reason that they're spending hardly anything at all on it is because the evidence really isn't there.
I don't know, Professor Loeb. I don't know that I give the I know about DARPA and some of the advancements, but I don't know that I give the military that much credit for knowing what they don't know and having the kind of vision to investigate it at the level that Mick is suggesting, and whether that just shows us there's nothing there. What's your thought on that?
Well, my thought is that they're motivated mainly by national security concerns, and national security concerns are funded much better than science. And so I would think that when they talk about the data, they have the very best data possible, much better than scientists often have in their labs. That would be my guess. Now, all of this is behind the fence, and I cannot have access to it, so I cannot really tell you. But that's why I want to get open data on my own. And I think it's doable because it's not very expensive to deploy these instruments that we need in the same locations. And if we don't see anything unusual, we can just say, case closed, let's forget about it. Mm-hmm.
Good to have you both here. This was a really lively and interesting discussion. Mick West is a science communicator who debunks conspiracy theories online, and he's the author of Escaping the Rabbit Hole. And Dr. Avi Loeb is an astrophysicist and a professor of science at Harvard University. I want to tell you about our show tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And here's something I want you to think about before tomorrow at 9. If you're in your 20s, did you have to work in the summers to afford higher education to help with expenses, maybe family expenses as well? If you have a teen in your household, how are you viewing the idea of a summer job? Is it necessary? Not worth it. Hey, the teen economy this summer is really good. There's a lot of jobs out there for teens, and they're paying pretty well. But there's a number of parents who say it's just not worth it. What my kid needs to do is take extra classes in the summer or prepare for college or get ahead on some tutoring for school. So they're not working. So I want to know about your experience. As a parent, is your teen working this summer or focused on education or other pursuits? And if you're in your 20s, I mean, did you work? Was it just a given that you'd have a summer job? I hope you'll call in tomorrow morning, 651-227-6000, and we'll talk about it Friday at 9.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.